he ran to my bed. Well, I was in my bedroom reading, and he ran in there, and he was in there, and he went to the window, and he's got his hackles up, and he was growling, and he kept doing it, and then he went to the kitchen, and he put his nose under the door, and he was really excited. Oh, yeah. Then he went back to the bedroom again, and then I didn't want to open the door in case somebody was on the porch. Uh-huh. And then after about 5 minutes, when he kept doing this, I thought, well, maybe it's the new owners, because they come back pretty well every day to check on the work progress. Uh-huh. So I opened my door and went on the back porch and looked, and I could see the back door was open, which doesn't, my big clue should be there's no stairs up to it. They've just put French doors in, but they haven't put up the deck on yet. Uh-huh. The back door was open, and I could see a faint light. Uh-huh. It was a burglar. And when I told the police when they came about my garage thing the next day, the policeman said if a dog handler heard those three things, the light, the door open, and your dog's behavior, they would have been here right away.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
So now I know. Yeah. When he does that, I follow up.
Oh, good.
I don't know how he knows. It's weird, because he doesn't do that when the workmen are next door.
Mm. That's good. So he knows it's evil.
He knows who the good guys are.
Yeah, that's tricky. So, here we are at 3208 West 29th Avenue, and I'm talking with Linda McAdam.
Yeah.
Now, is that your maiden name?
Yes.
That's a thing.
And it's M-A-C, mm-hmm. capital A-D-A-M.
Okay. Let's see. Phone number again?
266-8046.
And, so before I start, I'm just going to ask you if you, by any chance, have any photographs that you might be able to lend us for re-sign.
Of what?
To photograph. Oh, life and times.
I mean, the only photo, a lot of the photos I cannot find. I've torn the house apart looking for them. I have some photos from around 1950 of maybe the front of the house, maybe the car outside. Any photos that my parents took of Vancouver were just our household and the people on it. I don't have any photos of Dunbar or the park or anything like that.
Okay. Well, that's fine. So let's start now about your history, you know, when you were born and how you grew up here. But you remember, I have a series of topics to talk about.
Okay.
And there are arts and culture, architecture, churches, commerce, community concerns, environment, family values, famous people, interesting people. Do you remember anything about market gardens or horse stables or anything? If you had a mentor, did you do with that? Parks and gardens, people and customs. Schools, sports, transportation, and your job.
Okay. I guess if I go back to when I was young, I can talk about family values. I can talk a bit about this park. I can talk about Lord Kitchener School. I can talk a little bit about Dunbar and stores I remember. Okay. I was born in December 11th, 1946 at Vancouver General Hospital. I was the first and only child of my parents who married fairly late. My mom was almost 41 when I was born. And I was brought home in their old 1936 Plymouth with the rumble seat. I was brought home to this house. My mother said that they stopped down at that little shopping center below the McDonald Hill there to buy a wooden spoon. And I howled as soon as the car stopped. So let's see, Mom and Dad at the time, the kitchen had the old wood stove with the, I don't know, about four burners and the firebox on the end, and then I think it was black, and then it was white enamel, and then there was a sort of shelf up above, I guess, where you put things to keep stuff warm, and the hot water tank was in the corner of the kitchen beside the stove. And my mom said that she had a wooden drying rack above the stove to hang my diapers on to dry, and I just envisioned her, she's cooking turkey dinner with the gravy, having diapers drip into the gravy. I hope not, but it's a horrible image, because she really did have clothes up drying above the stove when she was cooking her Christmas dinner that year. let's see, what do I remember when I was little? I guess one of the things that's very different between now and then was back then the neighbors really knew each other. There were lots of kids in this neighborhood. Most people, I mean, families were bigger than they were now. The people on Kitty Corner moved in when I was about 7. They had 7 children. The next door neighbor here had 4. The ones on this side had 2. I don't know. Those ones had 2 over there, but most houses had kids, and most of the parents then would have, you know, around 1950, most of the parents were probably around 30 years old, younger. They had their kids younger back then, as everybody knows. So the kids used to play running around the neighborhood. There was none of this being driven anywhere. Nobody was ever driven almost anywhere. We used to play in each other's yards. We'd play tag, just running around the streets and through the yards and over in the park. We used to play a game called Hoist Your Sails. I don't remember too much about it, where one person was it, and then everybody hid somewhere, and the object was to get back to the home base without being discovered by the person who was it. So that's how it worked. So we'd do that, and we'd hide in each other's yards and things to do that. Also, all the mothers stayed home. When I was in elementary school, I knew only one student whose mother worked. All the mothers were home, and some of the mothers in this neighborhood, I understand, I didn't know it at the time, they used to have little coffee clutches, and my mother wasn't involved in that, but some of the other ladies did that. So, and kids used to play at each other's houses a lot, and in the houses on rainy days, and I think people weren't nearly as isolated. When I was about, I guess, there was a family across the alley from us who Grandma Green lived upstairs, and her picture's actually in the Dunbar Community Center. She was eventually my piano teacher, but her son and daughter-in-law and their 2 children lived in the basement suite over there. Well, first of all, the one child, and that was the first kid I knew when I lived here. Let's see, she was 3 years younger than I was, so I met her when I was about 4, and I remember going over there in the morning while her mother bathed her and everything. She must have been like 1, and I thought, boy, this kid's really strange. She eats peaches for breakfast. And she and I became playmates. And I remember she had this little rubber froggy thing that you squish and it squeaked. And, but she'd come over here with her frog sometimes, or her little doll buggy with her dolls in it, and I would want to see them or play with them, and she wouldn't let me, and she'd say, "You don't touch those, or I'm going to tell my mommy on you." And then she'd turn around and take them all home. And they ended up moving next door on the corner there of Balaclava and 30th, out of the basement suite, and they had another child, and we stayed friends until she moved away when she was 7. And in the summertime, and I'd be 10 and she'd be 7. I remember her family and me, my mom and dad, and her family's, my little friends, her name was Jill, her aunt and uncle and cousins. We went down to Birch Bay a couple of times, for a couple of summers, probably in a row. One time to South Beach at Birch Bay, we all had tents, and all the dads came down on Friday night or Saturday or whatever and set up the campsite, and then the dads would go home on Sunday night and work for a week, and they left the mums and the kids down there. And that was really, really nice. I mean, people don't do that nowadays. And we used to, in the evenings, we used to go down to the beach and have a bonfire, which you can't do nowadays, and sing songs, and then we'd get milk cartons and cut them off so they were a few inches high and put rocks in the bottom and then stuff them with something burnable and set them on fire and watch them go up the tide, which you wouldn't dare do now. It's environmentally unfriendly. So I think the first year we went to Boundary Bay, and the next year we went to Birch Bay and stayed in the campsite there, which is now a trailer park, but it's still there, and did the same thing. So I guess we did that for a couple of years. That was really, it was quite neat. Oh dear, when I was probably about five or so, I somehow got involved in dancing lessons, maybe even younger than five, maybe four. Used to be a dance studio up. I think it's where Stong's now is, actually. I'm not positive about that, but I think it was. Well, this was like in a storefront. I think it was there. Possibly it was the stores beside Max Milk, but I thought it was in this block up here. So I got into tap dancing lessons and ballet when I really wanted to be an acrobat, but I got the words mixed up and said ballet instead of acrobat. So. And my little costumes for tap dancing are still up in the attic. I think I did that probably for only about a year, maybe 2 years. I suspect 1 year. And there's pictures up. I've seen pictures of me wearing my little outfits. So I think I was probably 4 and 5 when I did that. Let's see. I went to Lord Kitchener School.
Oh, yeah.
And the school's pretty well the same as it was when I went there, except for there was an area in the main building on the west, northwest, which used to be all open. It was under the gymnasium. I think they've closed that in now. But when I went there as a student, we used to play ball. Inside there, there were walls, a couple of walls, and we'd play games where we threw the ball against the wall and jumped over it and all this stuff. My first teacher was Miss Monroe. We used to say, Miss Monroe broke her toe riding on a buffalo, the buffalo died, and Miss Monroe cried, and that was the end of the buffalo ride. And the second day of school, Miss Monroe was away. We had a substitute teacher. Miss Monroe was Scottish, with a barrel brogue. We had a substitute teacher, and I came home at lunch devastated, crying. I wasn't going back. My teacher wasn't there. Where? And my mother tried to get me back to school, and she said, open the door and give me a shove, and I'd come back. And she finally ended up, you know, walked me down to the corner, give me a shove. I came back. She took me all the way, walked me to school, and knocked on the door and shoved me in the classroom. And I walked out and hid behind her skirts, and the substitute said, forget it, take her home. I didn't like the idea of a substitute teacher.
I needed that security.
So, I don't know. What do you want to hear about more about school? We had these funny little wooden desks that you've seen in the pictures with the seats that fold up.
Okay.
And they were all in rows, of course. And Miss Monroe had us put our rows of desks together, so we had two people sitting together all the time. And I think I sat with another girl whose name was Marilyn Brown. Her mom and dad owned a little confectionery store down on 22nd Avenue between Blenheim and Balaclava, and it was torn down years and years ago, and they lived behind the store. And it was on the north side of the street, and I think it was 22nd. And I would love to find her, actually. She was my little friend for a while, but her parents, they moved. So she was only around for about a year. And she and I, Marilyn had braids. And I remember coming home one night and telling my mom I wanted to have braids too. And she said, no, we can't do that. Your hair's too short. I used to have my hair chopped right under my ears straight like this, and I wore a bow here. And my hair was only this short, and I was going to have braids. And mom said, no, a big fuss, and I cried. So she finally got out all these bobby pins and elastics and managed to somehow put my hair in braids, and that was it. I didn't have my hair cut for a long time after that. I grew my hair out into braids. Marilyn had braids, you see. I think that's where that came from. Let's see, what can I tell you more about the... I can tell you, remember a few things about Dunbar, the stores up there. Let's see, on 29th and Dunbar, northwest corner was the Harkus drugstore, which I'm sure you know about. And I was in school with Diane Harkus, about grade 3. And the Harkuses lived on West 30th. The house is still there. The north side of 30th, just a few houses west of Blenheim Street on the hill. Small house. There was also on the corner of 26th and Dunbar, on the southeast corner, a variety store, like a dime store. I remember going in there and, you know, had the old wood floor and just flat counters. All the counters were just flat with merchandise on them, and they were divided into little compartments, kind of, where they had all the different things. And I remember cruising the aisles and looking at the stuff.
That was great for kids. Mm-hmm. We had one up at, my kids went to, before I first in Denver, Mr. Trent.
And then there was the dance place I told you about. And then there was McGregor's Dry Goods, which I'm sure everybody remembers because it was around for so many years at 27th, where Intercon Insurance is now. Mom used to go there quite a lot. I think she used to buy a lot of my clothes there. Yeah, when I was a little girl, they sold children's clothing. And yeah, then they went out of it and went into knitting yarns. I don't know what else I can tell you. I mean, I can tell you the names of all the families around here, but I don't know if you need to know that or want to know that.
You said there was somebody neighbor that I should probably contact with. Who was that?
Mrs. Knapp at 3227 West 29th. She moved here with her husband, I think, before I was born, and they have a son my age, and he was my second crush of my life. My first one was when I was 6, up at where my grandpa lived.
Oh,
huh? Mm-hmm.
Where did your grandpa live?
Chilliwack.
Oh, Chilliwack. Mm-hmm. Now, what was the vocation of your dad?
My dad was a tool and die maker. He was trained at Vancouver Technical School way back during... See, my dad was born in 1910. He was trained at Vancouver Technical School. So he was a tool and die maker. Most of the time, most of my childhood, he worked at a place at 12th and Arbutus, and the building is still there, but it's now offices and stuff. On the east side of the tracks, just on the east side of the tracks, on the south side of 12th, it was called Advance Industries. It was a machine shop. He worked there most of my childhood, probably until I was a teenager, actually. So he had a 5-minute commute to work, like a guy.
And you had a car that you mentioned there.
Oh, we had many cars. Actually, one car is a funny story about that car. First of all, Mom and Dad had this 1936 Plymouth that I guess probably Dad had before they even married. Like, my Mom and Dad married in 43. And in 50 or 51, must have been 51 because I was 5, they actually took a trip to Detroit and they bought a brand new car from the factory, a 1951 Dodge. And they left me at my aunt's in Chilliwack during this little trip. They were gone for a couple of weeks, and then they drove this car back. When I was a teenager sometime, Dad sold the Plymouth to the neighbor's son, who promptly tore it apart and wrecked it, which broke my heart. I didn't want him to sell it. For a while, he had a used Vauxhall Victor or something that he used to drive to work when I was a teenager. I guess before the Vauxhall, he bought a thing called the Mayflower from the neighbors. Actually, that's another neighbor you want to talk to. Next to the Knapps on the west side, the Lawrence, Mrs. Lawrence. Mr. Lawrence died a few months ago. They own Lawrence Books at 41st and November. That's them. They live there. She lives there now by herself, I believe. They had this 1951 Triumph Mayflower sitting in their backyard. And my dad bought it from them for $25. This would have been approximately when I was around 14, 15, kind of. He and Mom overhauled the engine. He put seat covers on, and he bought new used tires, re-refined oil, and drove that to work. Oh. And then he gave it to me when I went to university. And the boys at university used to make jokes about me coming across in the Mayflower.
Yeah. So you went to UBC, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Great. And what did you study there?
Math. I majored in math, plus I took a lot of zoology.
What did that result in?
I decided I wanted to be a computer programmer, so I did. That's what I did.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So that came out of the math.
Well, and a boyfriend I had very briefly in third year. I took a math course that required me to do computer programming, and that's what introduced me to it, and I really liked it. And I had to learn a little bit by myself on the fly, and then a boyfriend I had for a short time in third year went into that, and I thought, boy, if it's good enough for him, it's good enough for me, and there's no prejudice against women, and the pay is really good, and the working conditions are really good. That's what I'm going to do. So I did, and I don't regret it.
Great. So you programmed for IBM?
No.
Or Mac?
Oh, back then I started off on a thing called a PDP-9 back in 1969. I got my first job. I've worked on big IBM mainframes, Honeywell mainframes. Right now I'm deciding what I'm going to do next with my life, actually. I'm not working right now at all.
Very interesting.
Let's see, what else can I tell you about that? Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I can tell you names of neighborhood families and what they did and all that, if that's interesting.
Okay,
so when I was, let's go back to preschool, straight across the street, in the basement suite, there lived a family called the Skidmores, Noah and Phyllis Skidmore, with a girl, Barbara, and a son, Brent. Barbara was about 2 years younger than I was, and Brent was probably another couple of years younger than me. I played with them for a while, and Mom and Dad were friends with them for a while, but they eventually ended up moving to Winnipeg. I have no idea why, but they did, so we lost touch with them. This house on the corner, 3205 West 29th. When I was about 7, a family from Toronto moved in with 7 children. And she ended up having 2 miscarriages even after that, or one, no, maybe one stillborn baby, I guess. Yeah. And I played with 2 of the daughters there and was friends with them for years and years and years and years. And one of them, we just stopped being friends about 10 years ago or even less, unfortunately. But. And this, back then, the other thing is people used to live here for long, 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 long. People weren't very mobile. You'd get married, you'd buy a house, and you'd stay there and raise your kids. So, I mean, these people were in this house for... Actually, they moved because the husband died, or else they probably would have stayed longer. So they were there, I guess around 15 years. And then over here, we had the Lloyds, Ernie and Marjorie Lloyd. And Marjorie still is alive. You can probably get a hold of her, too. I have her daughter's phone number somewhere. And they had 4 kids, Marlene, who was 5 years older than I was, and Robert, who was older, and Alan, who was a little bit younger, a couple of years, and Sandra, who was actually 10 years younger than I was. So I didn't play with any of their kids. They were, two of them were too old and 2 of them were too young. And then in this corner, like I said, for a little while was my little friend, the Greens, Agnes and, no, not Agnes, Jack and, what's her name? Jack and Gladys Green. Gladys actually died when she was around 40. They divorced first, and she was an alcoholic, actually. They divorced, and she died very young, probably because of her alcoholism. And they had 2 kids, Jill and Lori, and Jill and I have kept in touch off and on until about a year ago. She's 3 years younger than I am. The house across the way, Granny Green used to live in, which was the mother of Jack Green, and she was my piano teacher.
Oh, yeah.
I started taking piano when I was about 7, and I took piano for 10 years from her. None of this driving people to the piano lessons. I just went across the alley. Very convenient for Mom and Dad. And after she went, then we've had, there's been a number of people living in that house. The house, the third house from the corner, I think, when I was little, there was a couple called the Halls who lived there, and I didn't really know them. They were, I think they were older. Their kids weren't in my age range at all. Next door, 3220, when I was a little girl, there was Gilbert and Connie Mill, who were a very young couple. We're talking about 19. And if anybody can imagine nowadays that a 19-year-old could buy a house in this neighborhood. Actually, I think they married at 19, but they weren't, when they lived there, they weren't 19, but they were very young. When they moved in, their children were probably, you know, 3 and 5 or 4 and 6 or whatever, so. A 25-year-old buying a house in this neighborhood. I think he was a salesman, and they ended up divorcing, actually. And the mum remarried and lived over on Donald and 37th for a long time. And actually, they both remarried. And the person he remarried was used to own a flower shop up at 26th and Dunbar. Do you remember that flower shop? Marge's? No, I don't remember the name of the shop. It's where the bank is now. 26th and Dunbar. Next door to the bike shop.
Oh, yeah.
She owned a florist shop there for years. Let's see, the fourth house from the corner, Bella Plaza, when I was a little girl, was the Mercers, Mr. and Mrs. Mercer, and they were a retired couple, and I didn't know them very well at all. And next door to them, I think, was the Baxters, and they were also a retired couple with, you know, they had children almost my parents' age, so. Yeah, I think there were. Right now there's 3 houses where the Baxter's house used to be, so I'm not sure if they subdivided the Mercer's and the Baxter's lots. They must have to fit in all those 3 houses. And then the house that you see up there with all the bushes around it, there was a family called the Frizzells who lived in there. And I just remember they had a girl called Dominique who was a little older than I was. I didn't really know them other than the name of their kid. Let's see. Okay, Balaclava Park, of course, was there when I was there. The park house was there, but there were no swings or any facilities for kids at all. Up in the northeast corner, there were quite a few more trees, and there were 2 cedar trees that came out of the ground and then turned a right angle and went kind of straight and then turned a right angle and went up. So we kids used to pretend they were horses and get on them and ride them, right? I don't know why they cut those down. They were the best trees in the park. Yeah, it was fun. And the pool wasn't there when I was a little kid. Oh, one of the neatest things we used to do when I was a child. In the summertime, we'd play baseball. And none of this little league garbage. I don't believe in that. The dad of the Lloyds across the street, he had a problem with his heart, so he wasn't allowed to do anything strenuous. But he would go over there, and I would go over there, and the kids, the Lloyds next door would go, and his kids, I mean, there were 7 of them, they'd go over after dinner many nights, and we'd play baseball. And the dad would be the umpire. And that was fun. I really liked that. Yeah, it was neat. Kids don't do that nowadays.
You talked about this tree, Vanover tree. Did you ever go as far as the woods over there?
Pacific. I don't think I did, but when I was in grade 6, I decided, well, maybe I did. I can't remember. I know I didn't go without supervision. I don't know if my dad took me up there. Actually, no, I do. This is bad. When I was a kid, a couple of times, my dad and I went up there and chopped down a Christmas tree.
Uh-oh, yes.
And I guess the second time he got caught by the police, actually, Uh-oh. Who found a tree on his car. Because my dad would cut a big one for the living room and then a little wee one for my bedroom, you see. And I think he'd put one of them on the car, I went back to get the other one when a policeman came along and gave him a ticket. So we didn't do that anymore. But I remember when I was in grade 6, I had a big crush on this Michael Knapp, and I wanted some tadpoles. There were all sorts of tadpoles up in the bush then, right? And I told him I wanted tadpoles, so he got on his bike and he rode up there and he got me tadpoles. He brought them back, and I remember having this old wash basin in the backyard there with these tadpoles, and he was showing me these tadpoles, and then I said, I want you to take them back. I felt sorry for them because they were going to die if I kept them there. So after he'd gone to all those work to get me the tadpoles, I told him he had to take them back. I wonder if he remembers that.
I wonder, oh, that's cute. Did he
do it? I think he did. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So many kids have taken them out. There's nothing left now.
Yeah, well, there were lots of them then.
Uh-huh.
What else is there to tell you? We used to have roller skates, the kind that you used keys to clamp them onto your old saddle shoes. We had saddle shoes with really thick, they were thick leather shoes with big, thick soles, and then your roller skates would clamp onto those. And we used to roller skate up on the sidewalks, of course.
Uh-huh. Did you ever bicycle
anywhere? Oh, yeah. When I was 9, I got my first bicycle. My little friend Jill across the street wanted a bicycle for Christmas, and I did too. And my parents had decided they wouldn't get me one until I was 10 because they thought I wasn't old enough to obey the traffic rules. But my little friend got one for her 7th birthday, I guess it was, or Christmas, or when she was 7. And so my parents decided that it wouldn't really be fair to me with my little friend to have a bike and not me, so they got me one for Christmas, the Christmas I turned 9, and I still have it. It's a Raleigh. It's a great bike, actually.
Oh, what kind is it?
A Raleigh. Still in the basement. And one of the tires is still the original tire. The other tire was overinflated by a bike shop in Victoria, and they exploded it. And the tire they put on is garbage. And I remember when I was learning to ride it, I was out with my little friend Jill Green's dad one day, and he was, you know, running along behind us and holding the back, and so we could learn to balance. And I was in the alley just behind the houses on Blenheim Street at the end of the park between 30th and 31st. And I ran into somebody's car and I broke his tail light.
Oh, there.
And I didn't tell anybody, and I came home, and I remember I was so upset. My mom and dad were over at my aunt's on the other side of town, and I had this thing when I was little, I wouldn't use a telephone. I don't know why, I was afraid to use a telephone, and I came in the house, and I had my little friend Jill, and I was crying. I said, you phone them and tell them, you phone them and tell them. So Jill had to phone my mother, and I don't tell them what's wrong. So my little friend phones me and says, and I'm crying in the background, and Jill wouldn't tell them what was wrong, but they had to come home right now. So they came home, and of course I thought that I'd be in big trouble, but my dad just went up and looked for the car, and he couldn't find it, so nothing ever came of it. But I was so upset about that, I tell you. Oh, when I was a little girl, when I was about maybe 5, for a year or so, I had a cat called Katie. And I used to dress her in my doll's clothes. She was a great cat, and she wasn't spayed, so she had a couple of litters of kittens. I used to dress her kittens, I'm sorry, in the doll's clothes and put her in my doll buggy. And I think I even wheeled them up Dunbar once, the mother with all her kittens, and she was fine with that. When I went over to the street one time to take a Valentine's to my little friend Michael Knapp, the cat ran after me and got hit with a car. But nothing happened. I just saw her spinning around under the car, and then she ran out and ran home and hid under the fridge. And my dad had to take the front of the fridge off to get her out. And she came around in a few hours, but she didn't seem to have any damage. It was pretty weird. And then my parents gave her away because I didn't believe in spaying cats.
Oh.
Stupid attitude.
You change now.
Yeah, my boys are just kind of pseudo boys, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Smudgy? You're not a real guy, you're just a sort of a guy. Right.
So you talked about moving away for a while? Where did you go? And when?
Well, when I left home, I went down to Kitts, and I lived in an apartment in Kitts. Let's see, for about, I don't know, 10 years, 8 years, something like that. And in 79, at the end of 79, I moved over to Victoria, and I lived there for 15 years. And I came back, not because I wanted to, but because I had to, because I needed to find a job, and when I got here, my father had died a year before, and I realized my mother was getting demented, and I couldn't leave her. So I got stuck here, and now I'm kind of stuck with the house, and she's in a care home, and I'm still stuck here.
Oh, she's still in a care home? Yeah.
Yeah.
Where is she,
ma'am? Little Mountain Place, 36th in Maine. Yeah, my dad died in 94, April of 94.
What do you think about care homes and things? Do you think they should have something like that in that barn?
Well, they have Bottom Park Lodge. I have to tell you, I'm a very conservative traditionalist person.
Yeah, right.
I hate change.
Yeah, that's right.
The kind of care, what I wouldn't mind is if they took some of those big old houses, like there's a few, not many, there's one down on Blenheim that's heritage designation, and made those into care homes. I think those would be great. I would much rather have my mom in a place like that rather than a care home with 100 people.
Yeah.
I'd like those care homes where somebody has a 6-bedroom house and they have 6 people in it, but where the old folks can still go out on the sidewalk and be in their neighborhood, but I don't want to tear down the houses and build 3-story, 100 people care homes. And I think it would be better for the old people when they get demented. Those big places are more than they can handle. I think my mom would be much happier in a house, a small house with a very few people and the same people all the time. Be much better for her. So I would be really fine with that. And there's a few of the big old farmhouses around here that would be suitable. There's one down on 26, just off Balaclava. There's one on 26, just west of Blenheim, that would be suitable. There's that one down on Blenheim that, where is it, 30-something or other, that everybody knows about. It's been in the media. There's not many, but there are a few that would, I'd love to see those be made into care homes.
Working at it too. I actually had an interview with the person who had the care home at Morissette Farmhouse. She would like to see it turned into.
Which is Morissette Farmhouse? That one we're talking about?
The one I'm a Mayfair.
The one we're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be really nice. Really nice. And of course the families, in my case, it would be really nice for me to have my mom just a few blocks away. Right now it's a 15 to 20 minute drive. And I could just pop in there on my way home from the grocery store or whatever, you know, it'd be great. And just say hello for half an hour.
Yeah.
Be really good.
Yeah. I think this intermediate step, let's say people want to downsize, they're starting to do the right thing. We have this big thing going on 41st Avenue, and that's seniors only. I guess you have to be 55 or whatever.
I don't know.
To move into it. It's just right across from Carey Festival.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm going to be really nice.
My problem is I don't much like apartments, period, for anything or
anybody. You lived in them, eh?
Well, I've lived in them, and I find...